Morning, everybody. Today's daf in Pesachim, daf Zayin. We fell a little bit behind yesterday, and so we have what to do today. So let's make up for lost time of yesterday. We're all the way back on daf Vav and Aleph, and we are towards the bottom of the Amud. Yesterday we had a very technical, very detailed discussion regarding rights and whether rights responsibility creates ownership of an item. We spoke about it in the context of chametz on Pesach, even if you're not the owner of the chametz, but you're responsible, and you have custodial responsibility for the chametz. Perhaps you're the owner, and the Gemara doesn't say perhaps. The Gemara assumes that you are the owner, you're the de facto owner of it, vis-a-vis Pesach. So that means that if you're entrusted with chametz of a non-Jew, but you're responsible for Gneva Va'aveda, so then you're going to be considered the owner. So either it's based on the principle of davar hagaron l'mamon k'mamon dami, or it's based on the pasuk that says lo yimatzeh. The Gemara basically offered both explanations in terms of that, why that should be, and that was a lot of yesterday's daf, a good part of yesterday's daf. We find ourselves now on Vav Amud Aleph, and we're talking now about the traveler. We move on to the discussion in the Gemara, about two-thirds down of the Amud, and we speak now about the traveler. He's going to go away. I'm Rav Yudah Amarav. The Gemara starts off. It's about 12-15 lines on the bottom of the Amud. So I'm Rav Yudah Amarav. Hamefarsh vayotze b'shayera korem shloshim yom min zakuk levayer. So you're going on a long journey. Now, I say long journey because usually when we talk about a shayera, you're a caravan. So basically, if you're hitching onto a caravan, it means you're out for a long distance journey. So the way the Gemara tells us the halacha of Rav is that if you're mafarsh if you're embarking on the journey more than 30 days before Pesach, there's no requirement of beer. Beer over here means destruction, but it means bedika, means going through the whole process of checking for the chametz and destroying the chametz. Tosh shloshim yom zakuk levar, but if it's within 30 days, so now there's a requirement of beer. Now 30 days, the Gemara is going to speak about in just a couple minutes from now. In terms of what the significance of the number 30 is, we'll come back to that. But in other words, just right now, we're drawing a line in the sand, and the line is 30 days, and the distinction we're making right now is before 30 days or after 30 days. Good. Amar Abaye. So on this halacha of Rav now, we're going to have Abaye and Rav who are going to comment on this statement of Rav. Amar Abaye, hadamar toch shoshim zakuk levar, lamar nel shedato lachzer. Aval ein dato lachzer, ein zakuk levar. So Abaye says, look, even when you're going on a journey, it's within 30 days. If you have no intention of coming back, so then ain't zakuk levar, so then there's no reason that you have to go through the whole process of bedik and biur, meaning you're not coming back. So amalei rava v'idato lachzor afilu mar shoshana nami. So Rava says, wait a second. So if your intention is to come back, now by the way, when we say come back, we mean on Pesach, it means right before Pesach, not totally clear from the Gemara, let's, for our purposes of our discussion, let's assume that intention to come back means right before Pesach. If you're going on a long journey, but you really are planning on coming back before Pesach, so Rava says, don't you always have to do Bedika? Meaning, let's even go back to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, Rosh Hashanah, 6 months before Pesach. Rosh Hashanah, 6 months before Pesach. You're going to go away on a long journey, but I'm going to come back. So if you're planning on coming back, of course you have to do Bedika. Meaning, you can't anticipate that 5 months from now, 5.5 months from now, you're gonna be back here, and you're gonna come back right before Pesach, or you can argue you're gonna come back on Pesach itself. But in other words, you know you're coming back. If you know you're coming back, of course you need to do a bedika, regardless of how long a journey you're planning on going on. Elamai Rava Hadamar Kodem Shloshim Yom means Zakuk Levar Lamar Nelashin Datul Achzer. Aval Datul Achzer Afilu Mar Shoshana Zakuk Levar. So Rava says, as far as I'm concerned, if your plans are to come back, you have to do beer. And there's no 30-day line that we're going to draw in the sand. Meaning, at any point in time during the year, 6 months before Pesach, if you are going to go away but you plan on coming back, you have to do bedika and beer chametz. Period. So the 30 days for Rav is only significant if you have no intention of coming back. But if you have an intention of coming back, you always have to do a bedika. V'alz Rav l'tamei damai Rav. And the Gemara says, now Rav is consistent because Rav tells us another halacha as well, which is related. Ha'osa beitza osar kodem shloshim yom zakalavar, tol shloshim yom zakalavar. Let's say you plan on making your house into a storage house, meaning basically you're not going to use your house anymore as residential, but basically it's going to turn into storage. And what exactly does that mean? If you take a look at the Rashi, second to last line of the Amud, Rashi says, Otsar, shehichnisham tvua, v'tachtei chametz. meaning that you're going to store grain in the house. Now, grain by itself is not chametz, right? We're going to make this point time and again throughout the Masechta. Meaning wheat is not chametz. Wheat is just wheat. Chametz is only when you have wheat and water sitting together for a long time. Right? Then we have a conversation about chametz. But wheat by itself is not chametz. Now, what happens is that there is chametz on the bottom of your storage house, but that's on the bottom. So in other words, ha'osa beso otsa kodim shloshim yom. So if you turn it into an otsa before 30 days, ein zakul glavar, meaning you're not gonna move the tvua. The grain that you're putting in your house is gonna stay there. The chametz on the bottom, it's already negated. You're not gonna search for it. So therefore, there's no requirement to bedikah beer. But tol shoshin yom zakuk levar. But if you're converting your house into a storage house within 30 days, so again, once you're within 30 days, now there's a requirement of bedikah beer. So even though you're turning your house into a storage house, even though that means you're going to be heaping on grains on top of your chametz, you have a requirement of bedikah beer. The kodem shoshin yom nami lamar nalshin datul ifnoso. Aval datul ifnoso, I feel kodem shoshin yom nami zakuk levar. And then, this is the consistency of Rava. However, if you plan on turning your house it back into a house, meaning right now your house is an otsar, right? I'm moving, my house is basically just going to be a storage house. But if you plan on turning it back into a residential home, anytime before Pesach, we could be a month, it could be 2 months, it could be a half a year, it does not matter. You have the requirement of Bedikah and Biur, because once again, if you plan on here not returning to your home, but reusing your home with it before Pesach, so then there's a requirement of beer. Okay, so again, Rav's halacha is that there's a line that we're drawing before and after 30 days. Rava's addition to Rav's point is that if you're going away on a long journey, but you plan on coming back, you're always going to have to do bedikah and beer, regardless of how long your journey is. It could be 6 months, but if your plans and intentions are to come back, so then you have to do bedikah and biur even before you go away. Okay, yeah.
If you have no intention to come back, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it still considered yulevah?
Well, the solution could be very simple. I mean, you could just simply do bittul. Meaning, so in other words, so yeah, yes, it's yours, but at the same time, bittul always can turn into the solution. So this requirement of bedikah, as we've learned earlier, that's a din derabanan. So the chachamim only the chachamim only mandated this requirement of bedikah only begins within 30 days of Pesach. Okay. So we've been speaking now about this topic of 30 days within Pesach, and so it obviously begs the following question: what's 30 days? Meaning, once you're within 30 days, now you're in Pesach mode. What makes you in Pesach mode? Hani shloshim yom, my avida tayu. So the Gemara asks exactly this question. We have a brisa that within 30 days of Pesach, meaning basically Purim, so now there's a requirement to get involved in the halachas of Pesach. There are a lot of halachas of Pesach. We're just going to be doing the Gemara, meaning we're not even doing halachas. We're not doing Shulchan Aruch. We don't do Beis Yosef. We just do the Gemara. The Gemara itself is 120 blocks. So even in Daf Yomi, by the way, it's going to take us approximately 4 months to get through the Masechta. So one can imagine that if you want to go through the halachas of Pesach, you're going to need some time. So Shoal and Vidorshim Behilchas of Pesach. So when is the appropriate time to really start sitting down and going over the halachas of Pesach? 30 days before Pesach. Rishim Gamlil Amar Shtei Shabbosos, and Rishim Gamlil says no, not 30 days, but rather it's 2 weeks. Okay, so we have a Machlokas Tanayim. Exactly how much time needs to be dedicated towards the halachas of Pesach. Right now, we're going to assume, like the Tanna Kamma, not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the marker in the calendar is going to be 30 days. So in other words, why 30 days now becomes the Pesach mode is simply because within 30 days of Pesach, there's a requirement now to be engaged in the halachas of Pesach, which basically means now I'm in Pesach mode. And because I'm in Pesach mode, so therefore all the sensitivities of chametz now begin. Meaning, am I going away? Yeah, I'm going away, but it's within 30 days, requirement to do bedikah. Now you have to do bedikah of your house, even if you're going away, even if you're not planning on returning. My time at the Tanna Kamma. Now, we have a machlokas between Tanna Kamma versus Rav Shimon Gamliel, whether it's a month or whether it's 2 weeks, in terms of when you have to start preparing for Pesach? When you have to start learning the halachas of Pesach? So the Gemara's question is very simple right now. Where are these two opinions generated from? So we start off with the Tanakhama. Tanakhama says we're on the very top now of Amud Beis. Shere Moshe Amud BePesach Rishon Amahati Ol Pesach Sheni Shenemar. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how we got the 30 days. Because Moshe is there on Pesach Rishon, meaning the 14th day of Nisan, and now he's instructing about Pesach Sheni. Now granted, Pesach Sheni is a makeup date, meaning that if you miss Pesach Rishon, you have Pesach Sheni. And we discussed Pesach Sheni in detail, I believe, in the 9th parak of Pesachim. I think that's when we are going to be speaking about Pesach Sheni. But you get the basic idea that Pesach Sheni, which is basically also Pesach, so that was given 30 days of prep time in terms of discussion. So that's the source behind the Tanakhama. And how do I know this? The Pesachim say, the Gemara quotes the Pesachim, Shenamar, we're in Parshas Baloscha, Vayasu B'nai Yisrael, so Pesach B'moado, that B'nai Yisrael did the Pesach in its appointed time. Muksiv, Ayin Hashem, Asher Hayu Tameim L'Nefesh Adam. And there were people who were tummy. And so therefore, they were given a makeup date, which is the 14th day of Iyar, a month later. Rabbi Shem Gamliel Amalacha, I did Dari B'mila de Pischa, Mesik Lehu L'chol Mila de Pischa. And Rabbi Shem Gamliel says, that can't be a good source. Meaning, over there, it's not because there was a need for 30 days of prep time. It just happens to be that they were on Pesach. So Moshe now, since he's talking about Pesach, so he's going to talk about the makeup date as well. Not because there was a requirement of 30 days, just simply because it was germane to the day of Pesach. So my time to Shimon Gamliel, so the Gemara says, okay, so now we saw how Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's rebuttal is to the Tanakhama. What's the source behind Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that he says 2 weeks? Sherei Moshe Amad Rosh Chodesh Umazel HaPesach, because Moshe was there on Rosh Chodesh and he was instructing the Jewish people about Pesach, which is two weeks later, 14th day of Nisan. Sheinemar HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim. He says, you know, this month is Rosh Chodesh, meaning the first month of all months. Nisan is month number one. Uksiv dabru el kol adas Yisrael lemor b'asol lechorosh hazeh v'ikchu lahem ish selavetz avos selavayis. And then the Torah goes on to explain how on Rosh Chodesh now we are going to start instructing. You know, the 10th day of this month we're going to start taking our lambs. 14th day of this month we're going to shech the lambs. Okay, etc., etc. So mimai, so the Gemara says, okay, I hear that. And that's, according to Shimon Gamliel, the source that you have to be engaged in the study of Pesach for 2 weeks. Moshe started instructing on Rosh Chodesh, but the Gemara says, but the argument is not conclusive. Mimai debereish yarcha kai. Dilma ba'ar ba'bi yarcha b'chamisha b'yarcha kai. You don't know that Moshe started instructing on Rosh Chodesh. There's nowhere in the Pesukim that it indicates that Moshe started this whole process on Rosh Chodesh itself. You could argue that Moshe started on the 4th day of Nisan. On the 5th day of Nisan, and all he needed was 9 days, 10 days. So, Ela Amar Rabba, Bar Shimei, Mishmei Deravina Mehacha. So the Gemara says, okay, another source. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe B'midbar Sinai B'shana Hashenis B'chodesh HaRishon Uksiv Vayisu B'nei Yisrael HaPesach B'Mo'ado. So once again, go back to Parshas Baloscha, and you're going to see that Moshe instructed second year, first month, meaning the first commemorative Pesach, meaning last Pesach was actual Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? What we refer to as Pesach Mitzrayim. Now the second year, first month of the second year, this is the first observed Pesach. So he and the Pesukim seem to indicate that when did he speak to them? On Rosh Chodesh Nisan, regarding Pesach, which is on the 14th day of Nisan. So again, the argument could be that it's 2 weeks. 2 weeks is the amount of time necessary to go over the laws of Pesach. Hachanami, the Gemara says, once again, not conclusive proof. Mimai debreish yarcha kai, dilma bar ba b'yarcha, v'chamisha b'yarcha kai. Again, the same argument. In the Pesukim, it does not say that Moshe spoke on the first day of Nisan. It just simply says he spoke in Nisan. Could be day 4, could be day 5. So I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Asya Midbar. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, fine, you're right. In other words, from the Pesukim themselves, there's no clear indication. So Gzeres Shava. Ksiv Hacha B'Midbar Sinai, Ksiv Hasem V'Daber Hashem El Moshe B'Midbar Sinai Ba'ol Moed LaChodesh Hasheni. So we have in the beginning of Sefer B'Midbar the word Chodesh, and over there the Torah says, right, on the first day of Chodesh Sheni. Malahalam Rosh Chodesh, Afkan Rosh Chodesh. So just like the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar was day 1 of month 2, So too Parshas Baaloscha, day one of month one. Okay, so that's it. So in other words, we have now what's called the Gezeirah Shavah. So the Gezeirah Shavah, according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, teaches us that the first time that Moshe was instructing about Pesach was on the first day of Nisan. Pesach obviously is 2 weeks later on the 14th day of Nisan. That's the source for Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, that you only need 2 weeks of prep time to learn about the laws of Pesach.
What didn't say that since was, what didn't carry it over to Pesach Sheni and say actually 45 days?
Well, I mean, yes, but before Pesach Sheni, there is Pesach Rishon, so, I mean... Okay, you could make that argument. I don't know, it's... I'm not so swayed. But, okay, so that's it. So in other words, so we have now are basically the two opinions of the Braisa. The Tanakhama, Shimon Gamliel. Tanakhama says a month. How do I know a month? So the Tanakhama says because. You get to see it in the... In the context of Pesach Sheni, meaning Pesach Sheni was being taught when? On Pesach Rishon, that's a month. And Rosh Hashanah Gamliel seems to give a very good argument in terms of why that's not good. You're already on Pesach, so you might as well talk about Pesach Sheni. And according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, the source becomes the fact that Moshe started instructing on Rosh Chodesh Nisan about Pesach, which is only 2 weeks later. That's the source for Rosh Hashanah Gamliel. Good. We have a machlokas. Machlokas tanaim. How long of time do you need to prepare for the laws of Pesach? And how does that translate? It translates, first of all, when do I have to start learning about Hilchos Pesach? But also, as we also learned, when am I now basically mentally in Pesach mode? Meaning that even if I'm leaving my house within a certain time frame, because I'm in Pesach mode, I have to do a bedikah. So according to the Tanakhama, it's a month, and according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, it's only 2 weeks. Very good. Okay, the Gemara over here is now going to take a great opportunity to have really an important discussion regarding how to learn the Torah. Meaning, Sefer Bamidbar opens up where historically? At what point historically it opens up on the first day of the second month of the second year? That's where Sefer Bamidbar opens up. And then go 9 chapters later, Perek Tes, in Sefer Bamidbar, and we're reading about Karban Pesach. Now, Karban Pesach, when was that offered? 2 weeks earlier, meaning the 14th day of the first month of the second year. So in other words, it's clear that the Torah is now chronologically out of order, meaning there's no other conclusion. Just by reading the dates in Chumash, you know that Sefer Bamidbar opens up in the second month, first day of the second month, and then you go 9 chapters later and you're back up to the 14th day of the first month. Okay, so this is what's called Ein Muktam U'Me'uchar B'Torah. There's no chronology in the Torah. So where is it discussed? Right now in the Gemara. Meaning our Gemara, Pesachim, Dav Vav Amud Beis, is the Gemara's discussion of this concept that the Torah does not give us chronology. We are in the Gemara, and the Gemara here is going to ask now a really basic question. V'nichtov B'Reisha D'Chodesh Rishon V'Hada Nichtov D'Chodesh Eini. Why doesn't the Torah go in chronological order? I'm Rav Menashe, Bar Techlif, Mishmei Derav, Zos Amar, Sein Muktam Amuchar B'Torah. So that comes to teach us now that we know that there is no chronology in the Torah. Ein Muktam Amuchar B'Torah. Torah is not a history. The Torah is not giving us play-by-play of what happened. The Torah is the Torah. In other words, it's the blueprint. It's mitzvos. It's, in other words, it's, you know, it's a... Okay, I'll get to that just a second. So in other words, so we have this idea now of Ein Muktam U'Me'uchar B'Torah, and we have now perfect evidence for this to be so. Just give me a moment. First, let me go through some Gemara first, and then we're going to come back and discuss a little bit more of Ein Muktam U'Me'uchar B'Torah. Amra Papa Lo Amar Nal B'Shein Yana. Now this idea of Ein Muktam U'Me'uchar B'Torah, that we don't find chronology in the Torah, that's only when we're going from one discussion to another discussion in the Torah. Now, inyanim just can mean simply just subject matter. Inyanim could also be, you know, the Torah has paragraphs, right? You look in the Sefer Torah itself, and by the way, the Art Scroll Chumashim does a great job with this. Meaning, if you look in the Art Scroll Chumash, I'm talking obviously on the Hebrew side, so you'll see that they actually break up the paragraphs of the Torah as it's done in the Sefer Torah itself. So that's only when I'm jumping from one subject to another. But if you're in one subject matter, so then of course you assume chronology. Dilo temahachi. And the Gemara says, then you have to assume that. Why? Because we have certain rules that we use to darshan the Torah. For example, klal uprat. So we have a rule of klal prat. As a simple example, in other words, I have a generality followed by a specific. What's the rule? That if I have a generality followed by a specific, we go with the specific. Meaning, ein bechlal ella masha beprat. The prat now becomes the definition of the klal. And it's not an example, it's not anything like this, but rather it's just this. So the Gemara says, Dilma pratu klal hu. Look, if I said ein muktam ma'uchar, even in one subject matter, so can't I take the klal prat and kind of like flip it around? Meaning, you can argue, well, there's no chronology in the Torah, so I know the Torah gives us klalu prat, but what I can do is I can take the prat and just kind of loop it around back to the beginning of the klal. The su, and the Gemara says, and you can answer the question the other way around, prat u klal, nas klal, mosif ala prat. And we have the other rule, which is prat u klal, specific example followed by generality. What's the rule? The rule is that it's just, it's not even an example, it's just, we go with the generality. Dima klalu prat hu. So the Gemara says, well, can't we invert that? Can that become now a klal prat? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, so even when I'm jumping from one inyan to another inyan, meaning if I'm going from one paragraph into the Torah and another paragraph in the Torah, once I'm maintaining that there's no chronology, so can't everything kind of be shuffled around? So the Gemara says, Hanich laman damar klal prat meruchakim zem zayin dananoso b'chlal prat shaper. Now, whether or not we have the right to apply the rules of klal prat when they're not close to one another, that's subject to a debate. If my position is that I can't do klal prat meruchakim, so then we're good. Meaning, look, in one paragraph, everything is in its right place. So klal prat is klal prat. Pradu klal is pradu klal. And when I go from one subject to another, in other words, there's no chronology. So prat in one subject and klal in another subject cannot be reshuffled. I'm sorry. Can be reshuffled, and so therefore we don't have the right to say klal prat. However, ilaman damar danin, but if you subscribe, and it's obvious from the Gemara that there are those who subscribe, if you subscribe to the rule that klal prat can be darshan, even when they're right, when they're not right next to one another, but the klal's in one inyan, and the prat's in another inyan, well, how do I know klal prat? Can it be reshuffled? So the Gemara says, even Meruchakim, even the school of thought of Meruchakim, that I can judge klal prat when they're not next to one another, but when they're far apart from one another, far apart but still within one subject matter. When I have a klal prat in two subject matters, even the Meruchakim camp do not subscribe to the idea that I can apply the methodology of klal prat or prat u klal. Okay, adkan. So in other words, so basically what the Gemara says now is that we have this rule of ein mukta mucha b'Torah, and basically to bring the rule down to a very concise sentence, in one paragraph we say chronology. In two different subjects we no longer say chronology. We go now with this rule of ein mukta mucha b'Torah. There is no chronology in the Torah. Okay, what probably a lot of you know is that there's a major debate amongst the Mefarshei HaChumash, between Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi throws around the term Ein Mukta Mamucha B'Torah all the time. In other words, go through Chumash, go through Rashi and Chumash, and you will see very often Rashi says, you know, this is out of order. And Rashi's position is always very defensible, very defendable, because of our Gemara right here. Our Gemara over here says that the Torah is not in chronological order. So, for example, right, the Mishkan comes before Chet HaEgel, right? Truma Tetzaveh, followed by Kisisa. So, the Mishkan, the instructions to build the Mishkan come before the Chet HaEgel. And meanwhile, what does Rashi say? Rashi says Chet HaEgel came first. Right, first you had Chet HaEgel, and then you had the Mishkan. Okay, and then why does the Torah give it to us out of order? Okay, so that's always a question, and you always have, and you need some sort of explanation of why that is. But in other words, Rashi says first Chet HaEgel, and then as a response to Chet HaEgel, then there's the Mishkan. Okay, so and Rashi, and that's just one example. There's a host of examples where Rashi employs the idea of Ein Mukta Mamucha B'Torah. What you will find also very consistently is the Ramban and Chumash will almost always disagree. The Ramban says no. No. In other words, if the Mishkan comes before Chet HaEgel, that's because the Mishkan came before Chet HaEgel. Meaning, and the Ramban will almost always follow the Torah chronologically. So what's the Ramban's, how do you defend the position of the Ramban when our Gemara says, Ein Mukta Mamucha B'Torah? So the Ramban says, look, you're right, ein mukta mumucha b'Torah. But the Ramban says, but very limited. Meaning, when is it going to be, ein mukta mumucha b'Torah? When the Torah shows you by dating itself that it's out of order. So in other words, like our example, the beginning of Sefer Ban Midbar opens up on the first day of the second month of the second year. Then 9 chapters later, the Torah goes back to the 14th day of the first month of the second year. So in other words, when you're reading the dates in the Torah, and the dates are out of order, so then we're going to say in Mukta Mamukha B'Torah. But outside of that, if the Torah is giving us a thread, a certain flow, we assume, says the Ramban, that that is exactly chronologically, historically how it occurred. So what you have is a real basic machlokus between the Rishon, between Rashi and the Ramban, in terms of how to apply, how often to apply this rule of Ein Mukta Mamukha B'Torah. Rashi applies it very liberally, and the Ramban applies it very conservatively. Super conservatively. Okay. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Habodik Tzarech Shiyibatel. Okay. Gemara, we continue in the Gemara. We're on the bottom of Avam and Beis. And now the requirement of Bittel. Meaning you do Bedika. You check for Chametz. Which, for the most part, probably means that you eradicate all the Chametz in your house. You still have to do Bittel. You have to nullify. Now, we learned a couple days ago that Minat Torah, Bittel's enough. Right? That the Bittel really is all that is required in Minat Torah. Bedika is a Chumrah de Rabbanan. I mean, say Chumrah, I don't really mean Chumrah. I mean, but it was imposed on top of Bittel. That the Chachamim required us to do Bedika. But now we're going to go the other direction. Meaning, even after I do Bedika, I still need to do Bittel. Okay. On my time, huh? So the Gemara says, so why? Well, I understand. Once I did Bedika, right? Haven't I properly eliminated all the Chametz from my house? So why do I need to do Bittel? And Inem Mishum Perurim. So maybe it's because of the crumbs in the house. And here, the Gemara here is going to beautifully dispel all the notions that we have regarding I found a crumb of chametz. Okay, and let's go crazy. Let's not. Meaning, the Gemara says for crumbs are not a big deal. So Gemara says inem mishum perurim, because if it's for the crumbs that I'm doing the bittel, halo chashiva, the Gemara says it's not significant. Okay, so you have some crumbs of chametz in your house. That's okay. In terms of bittel, meaning that if I add chametz into my food, so then you're absolutely correct. And then any amount that I'm going to add to the food is going to be significant. But we're not talking about eating chametz right now. We're just talking about having crumbs of bread around your house. You're not in violation. You're not in violation of ownership. You're not eating it, right? You're not getting benefit from it. It's just simply, in other words, the crumbs lying around the house. It's, the Gemara says it's nothing. Lochash, it's not significant.
If you have significant amount of chametz and you do bittel, and then after Pesach you find that you have.
Well, wait, just one second. Wait, hold on. Let's first go step by step. So the Gemara says that if I'm doing bittel for the crumbs, there's no need. It's not chashiv. It's not significant. And the Gemara says, and maybe you want to argue that there is significance to the crumbs because look. My house is significant. The crumbs are in my house. So maybe we have this concept of agav. Well, because it's my house and because there are crumbs in my house, so therefore it's significant. The Gemara says that it's just not true. Vahatanya, the Gemara says, look, let's do it this way. Let's say I harvested the figs. There are a couple of figs left over on the tree, but I did the harvest. And whatever's left on the tree, obviously, it didn't bother me enough to actually harvest those figs. They're leftover figs on the tree. And I'm guarding the field, but I'm not guarding the field because of the figs, but rather mimnei anavim, but rather because there are grapes also in this field. Let's assume they're separated from one another, and we're not talking about kalim over here. But in other words, I'm guarding the field, but not because of the figs, but for another reason. Or, sofei anavim, mishamis adeo mimnei mikshaos, o mimnei medlaos. Or let's say, I harvested the grapes. There are a couple grapes left over on the vine. But I harvested the grapes. I'm guarding the field, but that's because there are other things out in the field. Cucumbers and other growth. Now, if I really do care about the leftover figs and the leftover grapes, so then they're subject to gzeila. No one can come and take it from the field. And they're obligated to miser. However, Bizman she'ein balabayis makbid alayim mutar misham gezel patur misham meiser. However, if I don't care about the leftover figs and I don't care about the leftover grapes, and even if I'm guarding the field, the leftover figs and grapes are not relevant. They're not significant. Anyone can come to my field and take it. I mean, okay, there's trespassing issues, but in other words, there's no gzela for taking those figs. I've given up on them, obviously. And furthermore, if I take them off the tree, they're not chayv and meiser because they're basically hefker. And there's no obligation of trumas and meisers on hefker. So what you see over there is that just because I have a little bit left over, it's not significant, even if I'm guarding the field. So now translate it back to crumbs in my house. I have some crumbs in my house on Pesach, before Pesach. It's not significant. Even though I like my house, I'm not going to let people in my house. It doesn't matter. The crumbs are simply not significant. So, question is back to where we started from. I did bedika. I got rid of the chametz from my house. So why do I have to do bittul now? What's the purpose of bittul? Amarab gzereshami yimsa gluska yafe v'dayta yilave. So the Gemara gives the answer, which is, because even though I did a bedika, but we're human, prone to human error. Which means that maybe I didn't find all the rolls and bagels in my house. And may end up happening is on Pesach itself, I may find a bagel. Finding a crumb is not significant. Finding a bagel, well, listen, it's a bagel. Right? So therefore, what bittul accomplishes is that prior to Pesach, now, good. In other words, the backup plan worked. Meaning, I first did bedika, which, to the best of my human ability, I've searched and destroyed all chametz in my house. And just in case I didn't search and destroy all chametz in my house, any chametz that happens to me in my house after the bedika, so I was mevatel, I nullified it. That's the purpose of bittul. It's not for the crumbs, it's for a bagel. V'chimishkachalei levatlei. So the Gemara says, okay, well, why not do the following? Why not just do a bedika? Don't do bittul. And then, if you happen to come across a bagel on Pesach, do bittul then. So the Gemara says, too late. So the Gemara says it's too late. Once there's an iser of chametz, I no longer have the right to do bittul. Interesting. Essentially what the Gemara is saying is that I can only do bittul when I'm the owner. But if I'm no longer the owner, I can't do bittul. In other words, once you get to Pesach itself, I'm in a lose-lose situation. I lose in the sense that if I'm the owner of chametz, that's it. You violated the Torah, prohibition of buy your own, buy your matzah. Okay, so good. So fine. So how about this? How about now I nullify it? I can't. It's not mine. Now, if you're confused, good. In other words, it's healthy to be confused at this point in time. Meaning, you just told me I own it, so that I'm violating this in the Torah, and now you tell me, but I can't do bittul because I don't own it. Well, which one is it? Do I own it, or do I not own it? The Gemara says both are true. Ama Rebbe Lazar shnei dvarim einam birushuso shel adam v'asana kasuv ki'ilu birushuso. Two things in this world that are not yours but are yours. Be'elohein. And they are bor b'rishus harabim v'chametz mishayshas v'lamala. Let's say I dig a ditch in the rishus harabim. Okay? Rishus harabim, is that mine? No, it's not. It's public. Let's say I dig a ditch in the rishus harabim. Is the ditch mine? Can I claim ownership? Of course not. It's still public. It's public property. However, someone falls in the ditch. Am I liable? Oh, you bet I am. Meaning, that's one of the dalin nezikin. One of the dalin nezikin is bor. If I create a pit in a Rishus HaRabim, I'm going to be liable for all damages that it accomplishes, even though the ditch is not mine, but the Torah makes it mine. Same thing with Chametz. Chametz is not mine, but the Torah makes it mine. In other words, so can I do bittul? No, it's not yours. Are you going to be liable for owning Chametz? Yeah. It's yours and not yours. Okay. I know, confusing topic. It takes a while to wrap your head around it. I'm still working on it. Okay. So in other words, so that's why you have to do bittul before the chametz becomes asur. Okay, good. So now, where are we right now? We are on the eve of the 14th. We've just done an extensive search of the house bedika. The Gemara says, okay, now that you did the bedika, now what do? You do bittul. Good. Well, so when did I do bittul? the night of the 14th. So now the Gemara wonders, v'niftale ba'arba, v'niftale b'chamesh. Why not wait till tomorrow morning? Meaning, why do bittel at night? Do bittel the next morning. Do it during the fourth hour of the day, during the fifth hour of the day. So the Gemara says, yeah, but those aren't significant times of the morning. Meaning that when the Chachamim instruct us to do bittel, they want us to remember to do it. So if they say arbitrarily, hey, you know, 10 o'clock, Erev Pesach in the morning, I want you to do bittel. But it's not connected to anything, the chances are, good chances we're going to simply forget. We're not going to do it. In other words, we're picking a point of time in the morning that's not a significant time, we're not going to remember. So therefore, right after the Bedika, look, we just finished the Bedika. What better time to do bittel, meaning we're going to remember, we're already in the activity of searching and destroying chametz, now that I finished, so now do a bittel. Okay, good. So right now the Gemara has us doing bittel the nighttime right after the Bedika. V'niftalei bishis. We're now on the top of Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says, okay, but let's do bittel during the sixth hour. Okay, now here's where it's going to get confusing, and I'm going to take a couple of minutes right now discussing hours. We haven't done it yet, really. I have not really given us a good understanding of what hours mean, and so let's just for a moment discuss hours, and you're going to see why this is going to get a little bit confusing. And subject to a machlokas rishonim, exactly what the Gemara now is suggesting. Okay. The day is divided into 12 hours. Now, I'm not going to right now go through when we start those 12 hours, when we finish those 12 hours, the machlokas between the Gra and the Magen Avram. That's not really what I'm interested in accomplishing right now. What I do want to discuss, however, is just simply how to view an hour. Meaning, I say the first hour of the day. Just to make our discussion simple, let's say the day starts at 6 and ends at 6. Okay? Just keep it simple. So an hour represents actually 60 minutes. So in other words, so now we're going to talk now the first hour. What is the first hour? When the Gemara refers to the first hour, it means that hour between 6 and 7 a.m. The second hour means between 7 and 8. You understand? Meaning that when the Gemara says the Shas, right, the fourth hour, it means the time between the fourth hour beginning and the fourth hour ending. So really, it's not, when the Torah gives us hours of the day, it's not a specific time, it's a window. And that window starts and ends with that hour. Okay, if I say the sixth hour, let's see if we get this. What do I mean? I say the sixth hour. I mean, put that on the clock, anywhere between 11 a.m. and 12 noon. That's the sixth hour. I say the seventh hour, what we mean by that is anywhere from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Okay. Now, what the Gemara is, before I get to back to the Gemara, when does chametz become aser on Erev Pesach? Which hour of the day? This is a trick question. So if you're going to get it wrong, it's because I'm setting us up for failure. And I'm going to try, and I always try to avoid that. But when does chametz become aser? What hour of the day? The answer is no. The answer is it's not an hour of the day. It's between hours. It's between the sixth and the seventh hour, meaning it's midday. Midday is when the end of the sixth hour, or if you want to say it, the beginning of the seventh hour. You understand, you're starting to understand how hours work. When the Gemara refers to hours, it means the window of an hour that begins and ends with that hour. Fine. So chametz is asar on Pesach at the end of the sixth hour or the beginning of the seventh hour. Okay. The Gemara now is suggesting v'niftalei b'shesh. So why don't I do bittel at the sixth hour? What is the Gemara even suggesting right now when it says v'niftalei b'shis? So take a look at Rashi, and Rashi writes out, it's the top Rashi on the Amud. Litkenu rabban l'chol adam livata belibo b'tchila sheish. See what Rashi did over there? Rashi says, we're not talking about the end of the sixth hour. That's crazy talk, says Rashi. The end of the sixth hour, chametz now is aser. Once chametz becomes aser, you can't do it. So Rashi says, when the Gemara now is suggesting the sixth hour, so Rashi says, the beginning of the sixth hour. Of course. Because the beginning of the sixth hour, chametz is not yet usher, won't be usher for another 59 minutes, approximately. You understand? V'niftel abishis. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting is. Now, if time permits, which I don't think it will, we could do Tosfos, we could do the Re, but the Gemara over here is not okay. But let's not right now. In other words, let's just keep it with Rashi and keep the Gemara, streamlined so that I'm going to present it like Rashi presents it. V'niftalei bishis. So why not do bitl and the sixth hour? And again, like Rashi says, the beginning of the sixth hour. So the Gemara says, can't do it then. Why? Kevin di yisur d'rabbanan ilavei kedar reis adamya v'la b'rishus ekaimei v'la matzim evatel. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why you can't do it. Because as we learned earlier in the Masechta, but we're gonna keep repeating this information again and again. Because what happens is that midday, when the clock strikes 12, halachic 12, halachic midday, so now chametz becomes asar on a Torah level. Now, we don't have the precision to know. Nowadays we do. But we don't have the precision to know exactly when that point is. So what the Chachamim said is back it up. Already, at the end of the fourth hour, we have to stop eating chametz. At the end of the fifth hour, we can't even get benefit from chametz. So in other words, end of the fifth hour, beginning of the sixth hour, so already now chametz becomes prohibited. Midrabanan. Huh? And that's the beginning of the sixth hour. So essentially now what the Gemara is saying is, again, I'm explaining all this according to Rashi. What the Gemara now is saying is that the beginning of the sixth hour, because chametz is also on a rabbinic level, so therefore what the Chachamim said is, we're going to treat it like it's Aser Min HaTorah. Well, once the clock strikes 12, meaning once it's the end of the sixth hour, chametz is Aser Min HaTorah. An hour earlier, it's also Aser. Albeit Midrabanan, but it's also going to be Aser. And look at the power the Chachamim have. Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Yosef, Amar Rav HaMekadosh Meshei Sha'os V'lamala. Let's say I go over to a woman, and I hand her chametz at the sixth hour. And let's do it like Rashi again, beginning of the sixth hour. And instead of giving her a ring, it's too nice, it's too romantic, I give her chametz. And I say with this chametz, afilu b'chite kordenaisa. And I don't even give her the best chametz in the world. I give her chite kordenaisa. It's rough, it's hard chametz. Okay. We just exactly ain choshesh in lekidushin. In other words, right? Me and her married? No. Simple. No. In other words, and when the Gemara wants to say emphatically no, the Gemara says ain choshesh in lekidushin. Like, don't worry about it. Right? Nothing happened. Nothing legal has happened because you've given her nothing. Chametz during that 6 hour. Now, mind you, by the way, min haTorah does that have value? Min haTorah? Yes. Because it's not 12 yet. It's during the 6 hour. It's from 11 to 12. So Min haTorah, is that chametz valuable? Yes. But along comes the Chachamim. And the Chachamim say that chametz is also midrabanan. And lo and behold now, that chametz is, although rabbinically prohibited, valueless. It simply has no value. Now, gets on to a discussion. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi talks about this, but right, you've been around the daf long enough, you'll know how can the Chachamim do that? Meaning that Min haTorah, it has value, and Midrabanan, it has no value, and the Chachamim have the right to do that. They can uproot the Kedushin, and the answer is yeah, they could do that. In other words, you'll take a look at Rashi. Rashi says Hefker based in Hefker, they can absolutely do that. Okay. Anyway, the point being now is as follows. We can't do bitl during the 6 hour. Because once again, just like at the end of the 6 hour, chametz is aser, beginning of the 6 hour, chametz is also aser. On a rabbinic level, but so what? It's valueless. You don't own it. You can't do bitl. Olavatri sir, I'm sorry, good. So that's where the Gemara ends the discussion. Okay, so in other words, it's funny, by the way. Now, what comes out from this whole, from our Gemara over here is when's the right time to do bittul at night, meaning that after you do the bedika at night, you do bittul. Now that's what we do. meaning you probably noticed over the course of your life. You did Bidika the night before Pesach, and then after the Bidika, you do Bittel. You probably noticed also that we do Bittel again, right, during the day, right after we burn the Chametz. So that comes out after the Gemara, meaning that, because we save some Chametz for the next day, and, in other words, we eat breakfast, and so the Bittel that we do in the morning serves as a Bittel for any Chametz that we left over. But the principal Bittel that we accomplish, as the Gemara just told us, is the one done at night after the Bidika. Okay. The Gemara says, now, really, that's an assumption that after the Chametz becomes usur, I can't do Bittel. But the Gemara is going to end up saying that's right. But in the meantime, however, just a little bit of discussion on this topic. Let's say you're learning in the Beis Medrash. And now, while sitting in the Beis Medrash, learning in the Beis Medrash, you remember, oh no, I have Chametz in the house. So what do? Okay, so you do Bittel. In other words, don't get up now, don't go home. You're learning, you're with your Rebbe, don't go home. Rather, just do Bittel. Echad Shabbos ve'echad Yom Tov. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's Shabbos, whether it's Yom Tov. Now, let's think about this for just a moment. Bishlam is Shabbos. Mishkach lakigon shechal arba'as aliyos b'Shabbos. Now, look, on Shabbos, I understand. Shabbos happens to be Erev Pesach. So it's the morning of Shabbos. And you're in shul. And I'm sorry, you're in the Beis Medrash. And you're learning with your Rebbe. So don't get up, don't go home now. Don't get rid of your chametz. What do? Do Bittel. Ela Yom Tov baser isuruhu. But I understand, though, the other example was it's Yom Tov. Well, Yom Tov means it's the 15th day of Nisan. Chametz is Aser. And don't go home and don't get rid of it, but rather do Bittel. Didn't you just say that you can't do Bittel once the Chametz becomes Aser? Amar Vacher by Yaakov, Hacha B'tam and Yosef Lefnei Rabo Askinan, V'nizka She'eshisa Megugalas B'soch Beso, U'mit Yarei Shema Tachmitz, Kadimu Mavatalei Mekama De Tachmitz. So the Gemara says, you're right. Of course you can't do Bittel to Chametz. Once it's Chametz and it's Aser, you can't do Bittel. The case that we're discussing is the following. That what you did is that you started making some matzah. Yantav, you can make matzah. Right? It's not a problem. Again, we don't, but in other words, halachically speaking, it's fine. It mix a little bit of flour, mix a little bit of water, bake it before it turns into Chametz. You'll make matzah on Chametz. This guy, a little bit absent-minded. Meaning he mixed the flour and the water together, and then he went to the Beis Medrash. Okay. All right, and okay, so he's a little bit absent-minded, but now that he's in the Beis Medrash, and now that he's with his Rebbe, and now it's a little bit disrespectful to just simply get up and go home, and now he's got potential Chametz sitting in his house, so now the solution is do Bittel. Before it turns into Chametz. That's what the Bryce is dealing with. In fact, the Gemara says, this is not a far-fetched pshat. Why is the Bryce giving such a case? Meaning the Bryce is talking about where he's sitting in the Beis Medrash. Couldn't the Bryce have given a much easier case? He's traveling. Why Beis Medrash? It's got to be because there's a reason why he can't get up and go home now. He's with his Rebbe. It's disrespectful for him to walk up in the middle of Shir and get up and go home. So that's why the Brisa deals with this particular case, because he started making matzah, forgot, went to the Beis Medrash. That's what the case in the Brisa is talking about. Okay. So, in other words, you can't. In other words, you can only make something hefker if it belongs to you. It doesn't belong to you.
So why is the Vardei that requiring to say it's been hard?
Because the case is it's not chametz yet. Meaning you started making matzah.
Is that within the 18-minute window?
Again, 18 minutes is, not to make this more complicated than it needs to be. 18 minutes is a chumrah. In other words, the truth of the matter is that it doesn't turn into chametz automatically 18 minutes. If you're working the mixture, it can remain non-chametz even for a long time. All right, another time. when we get to the third parak, we'll talk about 18 minutes. Okay. The upcoming Gemara that we're about to discuss is going to really seem foreign to us for the following reason. We are never going to confuse chametz and matzah. Why? Because for us, matzah is cardboard. Okay, right. You don't have to agree with me, right? You can But in other words, so for us, like, we're going to now wonder, what is this? Is this chametz or matzah? Look, just bite into it, right? It's going to be a foreign discussion for us. But in the good old days, it used to be matzah was soft. Matzah was soft. It was flatbread. Okay, the best way I describe this, and we've gone over this a number of times, the lechem hapanim is not chametz, it's matzah. And do you know how thick the lechem hapanim is? It's a tefach thick. It's 4 inches thick, and it's not chametz, it's matzah. So our conception of matzah nowadays, where basically we roll as far as we can, we put holes in it, and then we burn it, so that's matzah for us, so we don't have any other way of viewing matzah. Right. I've heard the well documented, well reputed matzah of the Teimanim, which is soft, and I've never seen it, and I know Teimanim. I've never seen it, never eaten it. So in other words, we're never going to have this problem in our lifetime where we're going to ask, is it matzah or is it chametz? But the Gemara's conception of matzah is that it was soft, it was flatbread, it's like a pita. So now, one can legitimately wonder sometimes, well, is it chametz or is it matzah? Again, when we get to the third parak, there's going to be clues that we're going to have in terms of whether it's chametz or matzah. Okay, so when we get to the third parak, we'll talk about those clues. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara is going to have a discussion where I open up my bread basket, and what do I find inside? Moldy flatbread. Is it chametz or is it matzah? So let's see the Gemara inside. I'm not sure why this is coming up now, but okay. Amar Rava Baravuna Amar Rava Pashiyev Shakem Shiribsa Matzah Muteris. So if you have a preponderance of matzah, so that moldy flatbread on the bottom, you can assume it's matzah as well. So the Gemara says Hechidami. What? Ilem Diyada Bada Chametzi Kiravta Matzah My Havi. Now, if you know for sure it's chametz, so you have a lot of matzah piled on top. So what? It's chametz. And ela delo yadina ba'i chametz hi matzahu. So the Gemara says we're talking about a case where it's a flatbread on the bottom of the bread basket, and I don't know. I don't know if it's matzah or if it's chametz. Okay. So my ear kirata matzah filukulata matzah nami neza basa basra milo tana. So the Gemara says we have a concept called basra. Okay. In English, I'll translate it as recency, meaning that last usage of this bread basket. Now again, for us, again, another thing we never envision, which is that the same basket that I've been using for bread the whole year round, you know what, I'll just simply dump out the bread and I'll use it for matzah. Again, we have, you know, in other words, we turn over our kitchen. You know, we sometimes replace the oven, right? I know most of us don't, but I'm saying, but I'm saying, again, it's for our day and age, it's hard for us to envision, oh, the bread basket, yeah, just dump it out. We'll use it for matzah, right? We wouldn't think of that, but that's what they did. So the Gemara says, well, we have this idea of recency, which is its most recent usage usually defines what's inside of it. In fact, the Gemara says, I know this to be so based on Mishnayos and Shkalim. Mishnah Shen Shkalim, which has nothing to do with chametz, but basically tells us about this recency effect. Moshe, instead of Nesocher Behema, let's say I find money in front of animal sellers, La'ola Meiser. I assume that it's Meiser Sheni. It's Meiser Sheni, money that was used to buy animals. And Baharabais, if I find money in Harabais. Now, finding money in Harabais is so unusual. Right? Remember the Mishnah that says that you're not allowed to even walk in Harabais with money in your pocket. You got to take in other words, when you're walking in Harabais, you don't have shoes on, you don't have money belt on, right? You shouldn't even have money in Harabais to begin with. But if I do find money, chulin, so then I assume the money is chulin because no one's bringing Meiser Sheni money into Harabais. And Bi Yerushalayim B'Shas Ragel, Meiser B'Shar Yemos HaShana, chulin. Now what if I find money in Yerushalayim? Well, it depends. If it's Yantiv, so then I assume that the money is Meiser Sheni, and if it's not Yantiv, so then I assume it's Chulin. Why? What difference does it make what time of year is? Amar Rav Shmaya Barzera, my time, Ahol, Vashuk, Yerushalayim, Asun Li, Itzkabit, Bechol Yom. Because we have a general rule, not a rule, but just, it's known, the streets of Yerushalayim get swept daily. And so therefore, my assumption is, if I find money, well, the most recent usage of that money is what defines it. Alma Amrina Kame Kame Azle. So that means that money that's, there's no money that's been sitting there for some time. Meaning the money that I found was from today. Right? Basically today. And v'hani achrinenu, hachanami. So too, and so therefore, in Yerushalayim, if it's Yontif, it's Maaser Sheni money. If I fund money outside of Yontif, it's regular money, it's chula money. Okay, so here too, I have my bread basket. So, name a kama kama azov ahayda inahu. So the Gemara says, so, if it's Pesach, didn't I dump out all my chametz before Pesach? Sure I did. And so therefore, if I have questionable flatbread inside, and I don't know, is it chametz or is it matzah? Well, recency. Most recently, this bread basket has been used for matzah. So, the moldy flatbread that I'm finding now on the bottom, it's probably matzah, isn't it? So shani hachad ifusha mochiach elavei. So the Gemara says normally that would be the prudent argument. However, it's moldy. You know what mold is? Mold equals time. Meaning it's probably because it was sitting there for some time. So yeah, there's this what's called this recency effect. There's this principle of basra, but also there's mold. I can't ignore mold. So the Gemara says, okay, so now that you're giving me the mold argument, so that's a very strong argument. So there is a recency argument, there's a basra argument, but there's also the very empirical mold argument. So doesn't mold indicate that this has been here for some time? It's bread, it's not chametz. So lo tema sherabda matzah, ela ema sherabu yemei matzah ilave. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what we're going to say is as follows. This is not a function of how much matzah is in there or how much chametz is in there. It's a question of what day of Pesach is it? Is it day 4 of Pesach? Is it day 5 of Pesach? And I find moldy flatbread, I can assume it's matzah. We've already gone through almost a week of this. In other words, so it's assumed it's moldy matzah.
Okay, the principle of suffix.
Right, because I understand that, and that's a very good point. But these principles of basra, they're very strong principles, meaning it almost turns into a non-suffic, the principle of basra, of recency. So the Gemara says it's really moldy. So if it's really moldy, can I make the argument now that this has probably been here for some time and it's chametz, it's not matzah? So kamash malan kevin sherabu yemei matzah ilavei. I'm reading kol yuma v'yuma nahama chamima afa v'shadi ilavei v'af shatfei. So the Gemara's response to all this is that, well, no, even if there's a lot of mold, I can explain the excessive mold. Look, what have we been doing all Pesach? Baking matzah, putting warm matzah on top of the bottom flatbread. And what happens is that warmth is going to generate more and more mold and growth. And so, yeah, I take out that bottom matzah and it's green. And there's little white hairs growing on top of it. But I understand that, though. I can still assume it's matzah that I baked 4 days ago. And just that this bread basket has been so warm for so long, it's basically now been a petri dish for the mold. Now the Gemara says, really, this concept of basra is so powerful. So the Gemara says, Bob, we have a braisa, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Tevish, and Ishtam Shuba, Maus, Chulun, and Maus, Meiser. I have a chest that I use for both Meiser Sheni money and for Chulun money. Imrov, Chulun, Chulun, Imrov, Meiser, Meiser. So I go after Rov. Via my laser baso basra. So the Gemara says, why are we looking at majority to identify what it is? Why not use the principle of basra? What I most recently used it for. I'm Rav Nachman by Yitzchak. By my skin, I could go to the sham shabam maus chulin or maus meiser. The en yodea ezo mehem besof. I use it for both because I use them for both concurrently. So therefore, basra no longer becomes the guiding, defining. Definition of what it is, and therefore I have to go with Rov. That's one answer. A second answer, I bundle piles of Meiser Sheni and Chulin money inside of it at the same time. A third answer of Papa Amar Kagon Dishtakech Beguma. I found the money not in the chest, but in a hole in the chest. And so therefore this money's been here for some time. So therefore, Basra no longer becomes operable, because obviously by me finding it not in the chest, but in a hole in the chest, obviously it's been there for some time. I no longer can use the principle of Basra, and now I have to use Rov to help me define what it actually is. Okay. Adkan. Okay, obviously I want to get further today, but we did fine. Okay, so again, the discussion today of when I leave my house for Pesach, and when I leave and whether I intention to return will depend on whether or not I need to do a bedika. The principle of Ein Mukta Mumucha B'Torah, the Machlokas Rashi Rambam, we spoke outside. The principle of doing Bittul, I can't do Bittul after the Zman Isser, because it no longer belongs to me. So, and the principle of I'm going to be chayv on owning chametz on Pesach, even though I don't own it. Okay, wrap your head around that, and then the discussion, the final discussion we had today about the moldy flatbread on the bottom of the matzah cupboard. What do I assume? Do I assume that's chametz, or do I assume that's matzah? And the principle of basra, what I most recently used it for. Okay, I'll stop over here.